So I don't know if you remember, it's been a few weeks on Sunday nights that we've had some guest speakers and some different things, but we have been going through 2 Timothy, and I actually had one lesson left in 2 Timothy that I wanted to cover in chapter 4. It's the last couple of verses of it, so it's kind of... It's not usually the type of passage that we associate with deep theology or with, you know, rich biblical teaching. It's more of like, hey, tell this fella I said hi and bring this person with you. And hey, I'm cold. I need a coat. And there's a few things like that that pop up in it. But it is remarkable to me when you do finish a lot of Paul's letters and he offers a lot of these greetings. There is a surprising amount of theology in them. And very often, the personal connections that he makes actually do relate to some of the main ideas of the book itself. And so a lot of times they're easy to kind of gloss over, read quickly through. And we will actually probably try to read through this a little bit quickly tonight. But I hope as we do so, we'll recognize that there are some important lessons that can be learned, particularly as it relates to working together with people. So much of 2 Timothy, there have been encouragements to Timothy about working together with people. If you remember 2 Timothy chapter 2 in verse 2, Paul tells him, "The things which you have heard from me in the presence of many witnesses, entrust these to faithful men who will be able to teach others also." And I think what he's saying is, Timothy, you have a tough job there in Ephesus. There are false teachers. There are people who don't want to listen to you. There are people who are despising you and your message. You're even facing persecution. And you're growing in temptation to feel shame, to maybe quiet down, to maybe quit teaching as you ought to. And he wants to encourage them, don't do that. Don't go that direction, but rekindle that fire within you. But one of the ways you can do that is by having a team of supporters who are, you know, engaged with you. So make sure the things that you teach those to others. And then when they do that, then they'll be able to teach those to others also. And it's like, if everyone does that, then you end up with a lot of people who are on the same page, working together, sharing the same goals. Well, I think Paul is an example of someone who has done that very type of thing. He has taught, he teaches others, he wants them to teach others. I mean, you can just see that with Paul and Timothy. The things you've heard from me, you entrust to faithful men who can teach others also. I think what you're going to see in 2 Timothy chapter 4 is a glimpse of some of the interactions that Paul has had with his team, with people who are on the same page as him, or were on the same page as him, or he hopes for them to be on the same page as him, or people who are on a completely opposite page as him, and you see how he navigates all of these relationships. You will see name after name after name appear, and you can see so many relatable circumstances that people who work with others face, especially and particularly in ministry contexts. So when you're doing work in the church, when you worship with the church and worship with people for a long time, you'll probably have every one of these things. There will probably be some people who you love and you want to see. There will probably be some people who deeply hurt and disappointed you. You'll probably see some people who you haven't seen in a while and you want to see them again. And there will probably be some people who you hope you never see again. They caused you much harm and they were completely opposed to what you were doing. And like, as you read through this, you're going to see Paul mention all of these types of people. He's going to talk about people, I want to see this person because they're very useful to me. I want to see this person. And he'll mention the good, the bad, the ugly, everything in between. And I think it's a rich look at what Paul experiences in his relationships with others. And one of the things that makes it especially pertinent is we're about to read the last words that we have, that history has, that the Bible has, of the words of Paul before he was executed. So these are the last things that we have access to. Did he ever write any other, you know, short note after this? We have no idea. But these are the last words that we have recorded of the Apostle Paul's life. It's the end of 2 Timothy. In the passage right before this, he says, chapter 4 and verse 6, "For I am already being poured out as a drink offering, and the time of my departure has come." He recognizes he is facing death. And so there's a couple of things that he wants before that happens. One of those things, he wants to see Timothy. He cares about Timothy. He loves Timothy. He's been a teacher and a father figure to Timothy. He wants to see Timothy before this happens. And so a couple of times in these final verses, he's going to tell Timothy, I know you have a great work going on there in Ephesus. I know there's important things. I know I just gave you a whole bunch of tips and reasons and things that you should do as you continue in that work, but leave it for a while. Come see me. Especially before winter, he asked them to come. And so when you look at verse 9, we're going to start, and Paul's going to tell Timothy, make every effort to come to me soon. He'll repeat this when you get to verse 21. He says, make every effort to come to me before winter. And so Paul he recognizes that his life is drawing to a close. He also recognizes that it's often considered more difficult to travel in winter. And if winter gets here, then it might be even longer before Timothy can make the trip. So he's saying, come quickly. Please come quickly. I want to see you, Timothy. And so Paul does love Timothy. He has not been able to see him. He has tried to encourage him. He's put Timothy in an important place to do an important work, but he does want to see him before he goes. I think there are relationships that we have with people like that, where we might not be able to see them as much as we would like. We care about them. We want to encourage them, but we also want to be encouraged and refreshed by them. And I think that's what Paul is wanting here with Timothy. He then, in verse 10, contrasts what he's hoping to see and experience with Timothy with what he has seen and experienced with some other people. Notably, you get to verse 10, he mentions a guy named Demas. He says, make every effort to come to me soon, for Demas, having loved this present world, has deserted me and gone to Thessalonica. Crescens has gone to Galatia, Titus to Dalmatia. So I don't think all of those guys, we're not given the circumstances of why they went to these different cities. Some of them perhaps have gone there to do to continue to minister for the gospel, and they still have a good relationship with Paul. But Demas in particular, we're told, I don't think he's going there to do mission work. I don't think he's gone to Thessalonica to plant a church or to encourage the body, because Paul actually gives us his motivation. He says, Demas, having loved this present world, has deserted me and gone to Thessalonica. I think this is probably one of those team members who has deeply hurt and disappointed Paul. What is it he loves so much about the world? Might it be some of the very things that Timothy has been struggling with? Like, he would rather just get along with the world and not have to face ridicule, shame, and persecution for the sake and the cause of Christ. Going and leaving as he did is a way to avoid some of the hardships that come with being the servant of Christ. Maybe it's something other than that. Maybe he just is worldly in his lusts and passions and thought, you know what, I'm no longer going to live a Christian moral life. I'm going to go back to the way of life where I could just be ruled by my passions and desires. We're not told the specifics other than he deserted Paul and went to Thessalonica out of a love for the world rather than a love for Paul and a love for the gospel. And I wonder. So Paul is writing this letter to Timothy, and he says some things early on, like chapter 1 and verse 8. Therefore, do not be ashamed of the testimony of the Lord or of me, his prisoner, but join with me in suffering. I wonder how long before Paul started writing these words, Demas actually left. If that was someone Paul was close to, if it was someone Paul cared about, and he sees him leave because he loves the present world and because the ministry is hard and because the work of the kingdom brings about persecution and hardship, and he's thinking, Demas perhaps was ashamed of Paul and left for an easier path or left for worldly pleasures. He's thinking, I got a lot of people out there who are suffering right now. I need to encourage them so that they don't follow that same path, so that they don't follow down that same dangerous trail. And so I wonder if that's the type of thing that could serve as a wake-up call. So he tells Timothy, I want you to come to me, and I want to encourage you before I go, because Demas has already abandoned me because he loved the world too much. I don't want to see that type of thing happen with someone that I love very dearly. And so he's calling Timothy to come to him because Demas has left. And then he also mentions some of the others who has left, and Paul is left nearly alone. Verse 11, he says, only Luke, is with me. Now, that probably is the same Luke who is the author of the Gospel of Luke. And then that next line, he says, "And pick up Mark and bring him with you, for he is useful to me for service." And that is probably the Mark, who's also known as John Mark, who is the author of the Gospel of Mark. And so a couple of interesting things here. I think you can never say with absolute certainty, unless there's other descriptions given, like so many people shared the same name. When you see a name pop up in this verse to make those connections. But these are people that Paul would have known and had connections with. We know that the gospel author of Luke and Acts was someone who journeyed with Paul. You know that from the book of Acts. And you know that so was Mark. In fact, something really interesting happens with Mark, kind of in this context here of people having deserted Paul. You know what Mark did? This is Acts chapter 13, I think it's verse 13, where John, you're kind of learning about Paul's journeys, and then it, just one little line in there says, "And John Mark left them and went back to Jerusalem." And then it continues on, and that was a relative of Barnabas. And so Barnabas and Paul are on these missionary journeys. John Mark joins them for a while, and then he leaves, and we're not told much about that until you get to the end of Acts chapter 15. And I want to read that quickly for us. Acts chapter 15, Paul and Barnabas are considering going on another missionary journey, and yet there's a hiccup in their plans because they come to realize they have a disagreement about who should be on the team, who they can bring with them on this journey. You know who Barnabas is wanting to bring? He's wanting to bring Mark or John Mark. You know who Paul's wanting to bring? Not him. Why? Because last time they were on a journey, he left. He went back home. He might be thinking of John Mark as, maybe not quite what Demas is, as doing it because he loved the present world, but he certainly doesn't have a high respect for his ability to endure faithfully through hardships that are inevitably going to come on a missionary journey. And so this is Acts chapter 15 and verse 37. They're talking about the team. They're talking about where they're going to go. And it says, "Barnabas wanted to take John, called Mark, along with them also. But Paul kept insisting that they should not take him along, who had deserted them in Pamphylia and who had not gone with them to the work. And there occurred such a sharp disagreement that they separated from one another. And Barnabas took Mark with him and sailed away to Cyprus. But Paul chose Silas and left, being committed to the brethren, by the brethren to the grace of the Lord. And he was traveling through Syria and Cilicia, strengthening the churches." So Paul and Barnabas actually end up splitting and going different ways and to different geographical regions to do their missionary work. Now, they are still brothers, and they are still teaching the same gospel, but they had a strong disagreement about the best way to go about doing that because Barnabas wanted to say, "Hey, let's try John Mark again," and Paul's saying, "You can't trust him. He abandoned us already. We're not going to do this again." So it's really, really interesting to me that at the end of Paul's life, as he's writing this letter to Timothy, and he's talking about the people that he wants to see, and he's talking about people who have abandoned him, one of the people who he says, "Make sure you bring him with you," is John Mark. He says, "Timothy, I want you to come, and I want you to bring John Mark." Why? This is chapter 4 and verse 11. "For he is useful for me," or to me, "for service." Paul sees him as someone who's actually useful. I talked about how you'll see all kinds of moments in relationships that Paul has with people, and they've all had like different experiences with him. Some of them he loves and longs to see, and some of them have deeply hurt and disappointed or abandoned him. I think here you get someone who had at one point seemingly, or at least Paul felt like, abandoned him, and yet now he's someone who is forgiven, who is trusted, who is useful, and Paul wants to see again. I think you'll have those types of relationships too. Maybe John Mark has grown over the years. Maybe Paul has become more forgiving over the years, and Paul has been abandoned by more and more people and realizes, you know what? That first one really, really hurt, but I recognize that's something that more people do. Maybe Paul is more lenient towards him than he once was. Like, we're not told the background information. Maybe just as more time has passed, Paul has softened in his views towards John Mark, but it is clear that he now sees him as someone that he wants to see again, and he finds useful for the sake of the kingdom, and he finds useful. And so you see people who he wants to see, people who've abandoned him, people who had abandoned him, but now he wants to see again because he's forgiven them. You see people like Luke who have stayed with him. You see some people who have left for good reason. You see some people who have left for bad reasons. And you see all of this going on in these final words of Paul. He then says, in verse 12, but Tychicus I have sent to Ephesus. So here is someone who has left, but it explicitly tells us that Paul was the reason behind it. Kind of like Paul is the one who told Timothy to stay in Ephesus. Well, here you have a guy named Tychicus who has been sent to Ephesus. And then verse 13, when you come, bring the cloak, which I left at Troas with Carpus, and the books, especially the parchments. That's an interesting verse. I love just some of the details like that, that we, again, you can speculate as to what he's saying. A lot of people do. You know, he wants the cloak. One thing that it'll say, and I already read it, in verse 21, he says, make every effort to come before winter. He probably wants his cloak because winter's going to be coming, and that would make some sense. That could help. But then also you have the language about bring the scrolls or the books, especially the parchments. You know, you wonder, what is Paul needing these things for? You know, Paul, nearing the end of his life, is he still reading? Is he still studying? Is he still trying to learn? Is that still a part of his regular devotional life? It's like, you know, do you remember the song, Live Like You Were Dying? And the guy gets a diagnosis and he thinks his life is about to be over, and he talks about all the things that you would do if you thought your life was about to be over. Well, Paul's in a situation where he thinks his life is about to be over, and he's not riding bulls, but he is asking for the parchments and the books. I think that's a way that Paul connects with God. I think that's a way that Paul grows spiritually. I think that's a way that Paul continues to grow and encourage the church. And this might be for both reading. Some of the parchments might be for writing on, so that he can continue sending letters and continue encouraging people. But it's pretty incredible to me that as Paul, in his own mind, recognizes that he's facing the end, he still wants the books and the parchments, the scrolls. He may well continue to be reading, studying. This may be scripture. And I think Paul is still seeing this as a way that he can grow and he can strengthen others. Verse 14, we get another relationship. Alexander, the coppersmith. Alexander, he's actually mentioned earlier in 1 Timothy as he and Hymenaeus of people who have made shipwreck of the faith. Paul has not a lot of... He doesn't have a lot of respect for Alexander, and here he's about to tell us some of the reasons why, but he speaks of him in harsher terms than he does anybody else, even those people who desert him. He says, Alexander the coppersmith did me much harm. The Lord will repay him according to his deeds. And so he recognizes that this is not a person who is just abandoned or neglected the work of the kingdom. This is someone who has actively and purposefully fought against it. And he has caused Paul a tremendous amount of harm. And in his case, this isn't to say that Paul wouldn't want him to repent and to do the right thing, but Paul does, I think, take comfort in the justice of God. When people are actively opposed to the work of the kingdom, God is just when God punishes. And he recognizes that God will punish. And he says it will be according to his deeds. And so God will be a fair and just judge for Alexander. But I do think he is recognizing that God, as a judge who metes out judgment upon the wicked, is actually a good thing. And it's something you can take comfort in. God will right the wrongs of the world. And Alexander the coppersmith has engaged in a lot of wrongs, particularly for the work of the kingdom and particularly for the work of the gospel. You see that in verse 15, where he warns Timothy, be on guard against him yourself. It's like, he has caused me so much trouble, Timothy. I don't want him causing you this much trouble. So be on your guard. Like, pay attention and be watchful, for he vigorously opposed our teaching. We're not told exactly what he was teaching. Maybe he was one of those whose teaching was spreading like gangrene. Maybe he's one of those who was engaging in saying things like the resurrection has already occurred, which is mentioned earlier, or relying on myths or endless genealogies or speculations or mindless babble. Like, there's all these words that Paul has used throughout these letters to describe false teaching. But apparently, Alexander has engaged in those and actively fought against Paul, and he's worried that he's going to continue fighting against Timothy, and so he's counting on the justice of God to help solve this problem. That's one way that Paul talks about people. You know, Demas, he's abandoned him because he loved this present world. Here we have someone who actively fought against Paul and opposed him, and he relies on God's judgment at the end. Then you get to verse 16, and you see something that's a really incredible demonstration of Paul's like love and grace for those who do not support him. He says in verse 16, "At my first defense, no one supported me, but all deserted me." So now he talks about how it's like, it was lonely, and a lot of people deserted me, but then he says, "May it not be counted against them." So I think for Alexander, you can count it against him. But for everyone else, the people who deserted him, may it not be counted against them. And again, I think Paul has learned a lot from Jesus. I think Paul has learned a lot of the message of the gospel. It is remarkable. This is the same guy who you remember when people years ago were teaching in favor of Jesus. He wanted to have them killed and beaten and stoned. Like, he wanted Christians dragged to the prisons, right? That's how he handled people who were against what he thought was right. That's how he handled heretics. Now you see a very different Paul when it comes to people who either don't support his teaching or people who are wrong. He doesn't think that we need to take violent action against them. At best, you leave it to God. God is the one who will be the judge. But on our half, he says, you know, don't hold it against them. You see a tremendous amount of love and charity even towards those with whom he does not agree. And by the way, you've seen that idea earlier in these letters as well, when he talks about responding with grace and responding with love and gentleness even towards those who have stood against him. In verse 17, I think we see something else that's very noteworthy and interesting. Paul has experience of, yes, the church is extremely important to him. Absolutely no question about it, and it should be to every one of us. But it is also true that Paul's experiences in the church have sometimes led to pain and to heartbreak. He has experienced people opposing him. He's experienced people deserting him. He's experienced loneliness. He's experienced hardship. He's experienced persecution, even from the church itself. But do you know who has always been with him? Do you know who he can always rely upon? It's not Demas. It's not Alexander. And you know what? I mean, it's not most people he's done ministry with, it seems like. He says, everyone deserted me. Even people like Timothy, you know, I think Timothy is on the right side with Paul. I think Paul doesn't see him as an enemy or anything, but he sees Timothy as someone who needs encouragement. Timothy's a man. He's dust. He's fragile. He'll have good days and bad days. You know, most of Paul's friends, Paul himself will be like that. Paul himself, I'm sure, struggled at times and was more on fire sometimes than other times. But do you know who is always consistently there? Verse 17, "But the Lord stood with me and strengthened me, so that through me the proclamation might be fully accomplished, and that all the Gentiles might hear, and I was rescued from the lion's mouth." He says, even though so many people deserted me, the Lord never did. The Lord was with me, and he strengthened me. He gave me opportunity and courage to proclaim the gospel and my mission to the Gentiles, and he even saved me from persecution and death. When he talks about rescued from the lion's mouth, that can conjure up a lot of images in your mind. You could be thinking of books like Daniel, of Daniel being thrown into a lion's den. You may well be thinking of Roman arenas, you know, where people were thrown to wild beasts and to lions and were ripped apart. There's an interesting, this is second century and later work. It's called The Acts of Paul and Thecla. It's not scripture, and I would disagree with a lot of the theology of it, but it actually portrays a scene of Christians being, and in fact, The Acts of Paul a couple of times portrays scenes of Paul being thrown to lions, or Thecla at one point being thrown to the lions to be devoured. There's one interesting one where Paul is thrown to a lion. This is one of the reasons I say it's not scripture. Paul is, he encounters a lion with a thorn in the lion's paw. And you've heard that type of story before. There's a famous Androcles and the Lion is kind of a famous Greek story of someone helping out the lion. But basically, Paul does that, but he then teaches the lion the gospel, and then he baptizes the lion. And so, again, this is not a historical account, probably. But then, later on, Paul is arrested, and he's thrown into an arena and to be devoured by a lion. And guess who comes out to meet him? It's that same lion that he already taught the gospel to. And guess who doesn't devour him? It's the lion, and they end up praying together. But all of that is a way of saying this. That's one example, but the idea of being thrown to lions as an act of persecution was a very real thing. Paul, in other places, talks about fighting wild beasts at Ephesus. Like, there were encounters where people were persecuted or killed by being thrown to lions. And I don't know that Paul is necessarily using that as to say, like, he literally was thrown to wild beasts. But it is a way of using that as a depiction of persecution that Paul very well could have faced and was a possibility in the lives of the early Christians. But then he says in verse 18, "The Lord will rescue me from every evil deed and will bring me safely to his heavenly kingdom. To him be glory forever and ever. Amen." So the one who will never desert him is the one also who will rescue him from every evil deed and bring him safely to the heavenly kingdom. Paul has much to look forward to, even as he faces the very end, because of the one who is always with him. Can't always trust your fellow man. You can't always trust even the people you so badly want to trust. Sometimes you can, but you should never put your hope in them. Your hope always belongs in the Lord, who will never leave you or desert you. He ends the letter in verses 19 through 22. "Greet Prisca and Aquila," or Priscilla and Aquila is another variation on that spelling, "and the household of Onesiphorus," who was mentioned earlier. "Erastus remained at Corinth, and Trophimus I left sick at Miletus." And so there are some people who he couldn't bring along with him, some people, you know, facing just the fragility of life and sickness. He can't always make journeys. Again, you're talking about every way you can have a relationship with someone possible. Some people wanted to come, but they were sick and they couldn't. Some people are in other places. Some people left for good work. Some people left for bad work. Some people abandoned. Some people deserted. Some people have opposed him. But the Lord is the one who has stuck with him through it all. Verse 21, "Make every effort to come to me before winter. Eubulus greets you. Also, Pudens and Linus and Claudia and all the brethren, the Lord be with your spirit. Grace be with you." And that's the conclusion. And as I said, these are the final words that we have of the Apostle Paul. I think it's pretty fitting that the last words that Paul wrote that we have on record, "Grace be with you." I hope that as I near the end of my life, and I speak to people who I know and love, my final words can be something like that. I don't think there's a better prayer or a better request that could be made than for the grace of the Almighty, eternal, and glorious God through Jesus Christ to be with another person. That's how Paul concludes his letter to Timothy, and that's how I'll conclude this series of lessons through 2 Timothy. May God's grace be with each and every one of you as you live and serve him daily. If there's anyone here who would like to become a Christian, if there's anyone in here who would like the help and prayers of the church, please let that be known. Come sit on the front row while we stand and as we sing.